President Raisi says the terrorist attack on Iran's embassy in Syria is a sign of Israel's profound desperation and last struggle of a falling regime. And the World Bank says Israel's onslaught on Gaza has inflicted about $18.5 billion in damages to the Palestinian territory's critical infrastructure. Thank you for joining us. The United Nations Security Council has held an emergency meeting on the latest Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Syria. Addressing the event, Iran's deputy representative to the UN called on the world body to vehemently denounce Israel's violation of the international regulations.
Regrettably, the absence of accountability and the Council's inaction has only encouraged and even emboldened this regime to continue its violation unchecked. It is high time for the Security Council to shoulder its responsibility and address the real threat to international peace and security. The Security Council must promptly fulfill its duty in response to Israel's reckless defiance. Urgent and enforceable measures must be taken to compel this regime to uphold its obligations.
Zahra Eshadi said Israel is defying Security Council resolutions and shows disregard for its international obligations. Syria's ambassador to the UN also called the attack a grave violation of international laws and norms. He said the Arab country holds Israel and the US fully accountable. The Syrian official added that the Israeli regime would not have dared to attack other nations' diplomatic premises if it weren't for Washington's blind support. The Russian ambassador, whose country had called the meeting, slammed the airstrike as a flagrant violation of Syria's sovereignty. He said Israel seeks to further fuel the regional conflicts. China's envoy also condemned Israel's attack as a grave violation of the UN Charter and international law and a breach of the sovereignty of both Syria and Iran. Earlier we were joined by a political analyst, Sayed Mohammad Marandi from Tehran, to discuss the Israeli strike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Syria. He says Israel continues with its atrocities in the region because of the U.S. political and military support. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli regime is allowed to carry out any atrocity because of Western support. We've seen for decades how they've imposed apartheid, how they've carried out ethnic cleansing, how they regularly carry out massacres in Gaza, in the West Bank, and now we have a genocide. So when the West allows the Israeli regime to conduct itself this way, there's really no surprise when it carries out an attack on sovereign countries. The Iranian embassy is a part of Iran's sovereignty, and the murder of Iranian officials in that building is an attack on the Iranian people and the Iranian state. What I find extraordinary, though, is that even now, Western regimes do not condemn the regime, even in a way in which makes it look as if they're serious. The U.S. is definitely complicit. It's more than complicit. The United States is the senior partner in the Holocaust in Gaza. Everything that the Israeli regime does can only be done with direct U.S. support.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has vowed Tehran will make the occupying Zionist regime regret its deadly airstrike on the Iranian embassy in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remark in a message of condolence on the martyrdom of a group of Iranian military advisers in Monday's Israeli aerial raid on Syria. The leader described Israel as a hated occupying regime. He vowed that the evil regime will be punished. Ayatollah Khamenei also saluted the martyrs of the attack, including two senior IRGC commanders, Major General Mohammad Reza Zahidi and General Mohammad Hadi Haj Rahimi. Iran's president says the terrorist and criminal attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria is a sign of Israel's profound desperation and helplessness. Ibrahim Raisi was speaking in a phone conversation with his Syrian counterpart, Bashar al-Assad. He added that the passivity and weak position of some Arab countries has prevented the Islamic world from adopting a united stance against Israel and made the regime more brazen in committing crimes. Raisi described Israel's insane actions as the last struggles of this falling regime, which does not respect any humanitarian and international principles. He also slammed the US and its Western allies for providing financial, weaponry and media support to Israel. Assad, for his part, condemned Israel's attack as a violation of international laws and a sign of moral degeneration of the regime. He also expressed his condolences to the government and nation of Iran and the families of those killed in the Israeli attack. The Israeli attack struck the consular section of Iran's embassy in the Syrian capital, Damascus, resulting in the martyrdom of Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and six other Iranian military advisors. Here's a profile of the general.
Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a senior commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps' Quds Force, was killed in an unprecedented Israeli attack targeting the five-story consular building of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Born in 1960 in the central Iranian city of Isfahan, Zahedi joined the IRGC in 1980 and fought in various battles during the Iran-Iraq War. Zahedi quickly rose through the ranks and from 1983 to 1986 took command of an important brigade of IRGC ground forces that was used to break enemy lines in multiple major operations. Later, he was promoted to commander of the IRGC's 14th Imam Hossein Division, a position he held until 1991, several years after the war had ended. In the 2000s, Zahedi served in more senior positions, including commanding the IRGC's Air Force and also Ground Force. During his tenure as the IRGC's Ground Force commander, he also spent a year at the helm of the Thara Law headquarters, which is responsible for protecting security in the capital, Tehran. Zahedi joined the Quds Force in 2008. There, he led operations in Syria and Lebanon, and played a key role in Iran's advisory support for Syria's war on terror. From 2016 to 2019, the Brigadier General returned to Tehran to serve as the IRGC's deputy for operations. He rejoined the IRGC's Quds Force in 2019 and served the force until his martyrdom.
Syrian Prime Minister Mohammad Hossein Arnous has denounced Israel's recent attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus.
This is an unlawful attack. We are doing everything we can to retrieve the bodies from under this building. We have been working non-stop since the moment of the attack until now. What happened is unacceptable to common sense. As you notice, as journalists, this is a crowded highway. But this enemy knows nothing except violating laws.
Arnous made the comments while visiting the site of the incident. Earlier, Syria's Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad condemned the terrorist attack in the strongest terms, adding that Israel will not be able to undermine the relations between Iran and Syria. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas also offered its condolences on the martyrdom of Iranian General Zahedi and his fellow advisors in Syria. In a statement, the Al-Ghassan Brigades denounced, quote, the cowardly assassination of the Iranian advisors who died for the cause of Al-Quds in the treacherous Israeli bombing. Iranians in several cities across the country, including the capital Tehran, have held anti-Israeli and anti-US protests after several Iranian generals and officers were killed in an Israeli attack in Syria. The protesters demanded decisive response and revenge for the deadly strike on Iran's embassy in Damascus. Fatemeh Masumi has this report.
Iranians took to the streets of the capital Tehran and gathered at iconic Palestine Square at midnight after the deadly Israeli attack on Iran's embassy in Syria. They chanted death to the Israeli regime and death to America as they waved Palestine flags. The protesters expressed their support for Palestinian people in Gaza as Israel's genocidal war continues unabated.
When we heard what has happened, we couldn't tolerate it, and we came here for the sake of our martyrs. Our Muslim brothers and sisters, Palestinians, Syrians, are all a part of our own nation, and there is no difference between us.
Two of our generals were martyred, so we have gathered here to show our readiness for retaliation. We are asking the Islamic Republic of Iran to take serious action against these atrocities and the disrespect towards our nation and also the innocent Palestinians.
On Monday, Iran's ambassador to Damascus, Hossein Akbari, confirmed that Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and his deputy Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi were killed in the Israeli attack.
It is our duty to come out because we felt that even though the resistance movement is showing patience towards the Israeli regime, we are still witnessing that the regime is pressing ahead with its atrocities, with the recent incident of the attack on the Iranian consulate.
We have gathered here at this hour to show that the innocent martyrs in Syria were killed amid injustice and impunity by the bloody hands of the Zionist regime. The regime has been killing innocent people, especially children, for many years.
The attack came as almost 6 months into the Gaza hostilities, the regime has failed to achieve its objectives of destroying Hamas, despite killing tens of thousands of Palestinians, mostly women and children. The two slain Iranian generals had been comrades of top Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani, who was also assassinated in an attack in January 3, 2020. General Soleimani played a key role in fighting and decimating the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in the region, particularly in Iraq and Syria.
A large number of people have gathered here in Palestine Square to strongly condemn the recent Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in the capital of Syria, Damascus. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
A joint report by the World Bank and the United Nations shows the Israeli war on Gaza has caused damages of around $18.5 billion to Gaza's critical infrastructure. The report says the structural damage caused by the Israeli carpet bombing of Gaza has affected every sector of the Palestinian territory's economy. The damages are equivalent to 97% of the combined GDP of the West Bank and Gaza in 2022. The report covers only the first 4 months of the Israeli genocide in Gaza and embodies some aspects of the besieged strip's humanitarian crisis as well. It has found out that more than half of the territory's population is on the brink of famine. The report also said over 70% of the Palestinians in Gaza have been displaced due to the ongoing Israeli airstrikes and bombing. Israel deliberately terrorizing aid workers and disrupting humanitarian activities in Gaza. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says nearly 180 of its staff have been killed in Israeli onslaught on the war-ridden territory, several in the line of duty. The UN body added that the war on Gaza has witnessed the highest number of aid worker deaths ever recorded in any conflict, emphasizing that humanitarian personnel must be protected at all times. The statement comes as an Israeli airstrike in the central city of Deir al-Balah has claimed the lives of seven international aid workers associated with a US-based charity.
The WCK team was traveling in a deconflicted zone in two armored cars branded with the WCK logo and a soft skin vehicle. Despite coordinating movements with the IDF, the convoy was hit as it was leaving the Deir al-Balah warehouse, where the team had unloaded more than 100 tons of humanitarian food aid brought to Gaza on the maritime route.
Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu has admitted the attack was carried out by the regime forces, but claimed that the raid was unintentional. The head of the World Central Kitchen, however, has called the incident a targeted attack, saying the strike indeed targeted humanitarian organizations showing up in the direst of situations where food is being used as a weapon of war. Meantime, international condemnations have been pouring in following the attack, with the US, which is the regime's staunchest ally, expressing deep concern over the strike. Australia has also slammed the attack as completely unacceptable. The UK, meanwhile, has urged Israel to provide an explanation. Our correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah to update us or give us an update on the situation in the war-ravaged strip. He says Israel has continued with the strikes against residential buildings across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli forces committed at least 7 appalling massacres, claiming the lives of 71 Palestinian civilians, in addition to injuring roughly 130 others. These numbers actually took the whole number of the Palestinian civilians who have been killed since the beginning of this onslaught on Gaza Strip to roughly 32,920 Palestinian civilians. Over the last couple of hours, the Israeli warplanes destroyed a residential building in the eastern part of Deir el-Balah city, particularly in Abu al-Ajin town, which is located in the eastern part of Deir el-Balah city. But while when it comes to Khan Yunis city, the western part of Khan Yunis city, particularly the vicinity and the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex, witnessed more destruction as more residential buildings were blown up by the Israeli occupation forces in that area, while the eastern part of Khan Yunis witnessed also another Israeli airstrikes and attacks against the residential buildings there. When it comes to Rafah city, the number of the Palestinian civilians who were killed over the last attack that took place during the last night amounted to 10 Palestinian civilians, including five Palestinian children, after they were attacked while they were sleeping inside their house. The Israeli occupation forces destroyed their house over their heads.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq has carried out fresh attacks on Israeli positions in response to the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza. The Umbrella Resistance Group says the attacks reaffirm its determination to continue striking Israeli strongholds. Our correspondent Muslim Salem reports from Baghdad.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq has been standing in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza by carrying out retaliatory operations in the region. Resistance forces in Iraq have started their operations by striking a number of U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in response to Washington's support for Israel. The operations have now entered a new phase as Israeli positions have been directly targeted in various locations such as Haifa, Eilat, and elsewhere. The intensification of the attacks on Israeli positions shows that the massacres being committed by the regime in Gaza will not remain unanswered. The second phase of the operations, which directly targeted Israeli positions, proves that regional resistance groups are able to inflict serious damage to Israel's maritime and airspace interests.
Resistance groups in Iraq and across the region have proved their ability to respond to the Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. They vow that their operations will intensify even more as long as the genocidal war on Gaza continues. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad."
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the countless blessings of the holy month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here in the holy month of Ramadan. What a beautiful month it is indeed. It is a little bit hard, it's a little bit difficult, it's a little bit tiring. Of course, we have a hunger and thirst and controlling ourselves. But despite all these inconsequential and insignificant trials and hardships, which, like we said, are difficult, but in the grand scope of things, they're not really that big of a deal. We are, you know, strong enough to be able to get through these things and overcome these trials and these obstacles, especially when the Almighty Allah says that the reward for an individual who fasts is the Almighty Allah Himself. So for such a beautiful reward, just kind of staying thirsty and hungry, and controlling ourselves for, you know, a couple of hours is something I think that it's a good deal. So anyways, we are talking about the various different blessings of the holy month of Ramadan. You know, sometimes we don't really realize, I guess, the blessings that are within the holy month of Ramadan. And, you know, I believe we spoke about this once also. But when we don't know the blessings of the holy month of Ramadan, or, on the other hand, if we don't know the importance of the holy month of Ramadan, then what happens is that we don't really benefit from it, we don't really value it, we don't really love the holy month of Ramadan as we should, because we end up focusing on the, you know, the problems and the difficulties and the hardships. You know, we focus so much on the hunger and thirst and I gotta control myself and I can't sleep on time and my whole life's, you know, fake materialistic schedule has been shaken up and there's this kind of another divine schedule that I have to follow for this certain amount of time. Because we do that, then we don't really value the holy month of Ramadan as we should.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about the blessings of the holy month of Ramadan. There are so many blessings, and really, you know, with so many days now passed in the holy month of Ramadan, and, you know, it's kind of sad to realize that the holy month of Ramadan is coming towards an end. But we should kind of look past at these days that have gone and these nights that have gone and kind of list some of these beautiful blessings that we had. You know, for example, these community iftars, where we went and with the community or with a couple of families, we sat together and we laughed and we broke our fast and we prayed. This is something which is a blessing. And you can talk about every one of them, right? In a day and age where you don't have time for anything, in the holy month of Ramadan, to be able to go and socialize with good, righteous, noble people, you know, of like mind, that is a huge blessing. Or, you know, at the time of Sahri, at the time of Suhoor, when we are eating that pre-dawn meal and we are spending time with our family members, what a beautiful time that is. You know, sure, you're kind of tired and groggy, but still, that conversation that comes up at that time is truly a blessing, and that connection that you establish with your family members, that itself is a great blessing. And, you know, and there's so many blessings that, you know, I mean, I'm pretty much done with time over here, unfortunately. But, you know, with yourself, you are purifying yourself, you're learning self-control, you are learning to rise above the materialistic realm and reach the spiritual realm. Or this beautiful connection that you are establishing with the Almighty Allah. These are all just a few of the great blessings of the holy month of Ramadan, which we can continue throughout the rest of the year in our Islamic lifestyle. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. I feel so alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan.
In the limelight.
Since the start of war on Gaza, the Zionist regime has expropriated 27 square kilometers of Palestinian land and accelerated settlement building. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Palestinians this year marked the 48th anniversary of Land Day amid the brutal Israeli regime war on Gaza. Near daily raids in the occupied West Bank and an increase in land confiscation and settlement building. On March 30, 1976, six Palestinians were martyred by Israeli regime forces as thousands of Palestinians in Israel's northern Galilee region rose up in protest against the Israeli expropriation and occupation of Palestinian lands. The event became known as Land Day and a symbol of national struggle that unites Palestinians around the world. Recently, under the banner of Stop the War on Gaza, thousands of Palestinians marched through the Palestinian town of Deir Hana, one of the towns in the occupied territories called Israel, where the most violent crackdown on protesters took place that day in 1976. Land Day is also seen as significant because it is deemed to mark the first time that Palestinian citizens of Israel organized collectively against the Zionist regime policies. Palestinian citizens of Israel make up around 17.5% of the population and are descended from Palestinians who were not expelled by Zionist militias during the creation of the fabricated regime of Israel in 1948. Palestinian protesters recently also marched through the city of Sakhnin in northern Israel, where three of the six Palestinians were buried almost five decades ago, Arab 48 reported. They then visited the family homes of Raja Abu Raya, Khadar Khalaya and Khadija Sawana and laid wreath on a monument honoring all six martyrs. The other three Palestinians martyred that day were Khair Yasin, Mohsen Taha and Rafat Zuhairi. The most important thing that the martyrs gave on Land Day in 1976 was the belief in the rights to our land, Ahmad Khalaya's brother said in a speech at the cemetery. From Sakhin, the protesters marched to the cemetery in the neighboring city of Araba to pay tributes to Yasin. Palestinians also paid homage to Zuhairi and Taha in their respective hometowns of Taibe and Kafar Qana.
A relative of the martyr Khadija Sawana, Wafa, said in her speech, Land Day is a turning point in the history of our people. It is a departure from the machine of oppression, emergency laws, and military rule without fear. And today, after all these years, we are still suffering from emergency laws and military rule. Since that day in 1976, Palestinians have engaged in widespread activities to commemorate Land Day and demand an end to the Zionist regime racial discrimination, in particular land and housing policies that have turned their towns into closed ghettos. Demonstrations in cities around the world were also organized recently, including in London, New York, Madrid, Rabat, and Beirut. As Palestinians prepare to commemorate the Land Day, Israeli regime forces carried out several overnight raids across the West Bank, killing a 13-year-old boy, Nabil Abu Abed, in the town of Qabatia, south of Jenin. In Ariha, the Zionist regime forces stormed the city in the morning, raiding several homes and interrogating residents. They also tightened military measures at the checkpoints set up at its entrances for the third consecutive day, denying movement of Palestinian vehicles into and out of the city. Meanwhile, in a report released recently, the Colonization and World Resistance Commission, CWRC, said the Zionist regime has seized 27,000 dönems, 27 square kilometers of Palestinian land in the West Bank since the start of the war on Gaza. The CWRC, a governmental commission affiliated with the Palestine Liberation Organization, said that 1,895 settlement units have also since been approved by the Zionist regime, displacing 25 Bedouin communities from the Palestinian territory. The report added that some 840 checkpoints and gates have been set up in the West Bank. The Zionist regime military has carried out 9,700 attacks against Palestinian residents and their properties and have destroyed and uprooted 9,600 trees, mostly olive trees, the report said.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Ramadan in the UK.
Part 2.
Islam is probably the most demonized religion in Britain, and Muslims are regularly the subject of negative media headlines, usually associated with extremism and terrorism. Faced by this onslaught, it can be difficult for Muslims to get their side of the story across, but that doesn't mean they're not trying.
Ramadan is perhaps the best time of year for Muslims to showcase their religion, and that's exactly what several initiatives across the UK have done, such as the Ramadan Tent here in central London, which welcomes up to 300 Muslims and non-Muslims every night to break the fast. And the idea behind these initiatives is very simple, that intimate human contact can break down barriers like nothing else.
The Ramadan Tent Project is run by student volunteers and adopts a gentle, non-confrontational, even subliminal approach when showing non-Muslims what Islam is. It seeks to demonstrate the values of Islam by setting an example instead of preaching, to build bridges between cultures and encourage interfaith dialogue through the simple act of sharing a meal.
We've been able to foster a platform for interfaith dialogue to explain, you know, the actual beautiful values of our religion, you know, and feel the community spirit most of all. I think, you know, when you look and you see, you know, just people of all different colours and races sitting on the floor eating together, I think, you know, I think that's what it's about.
I grew up religious, so when I came across what was going on, I was really intrigued with the idea of fasting and praying, and so I wanted to learn more. And just the experience of meeting some of the best people I've ever met who have such sincere intentions, it made me want to get involved and learn more about what they were doing here and what Ramadan means.
Every night during the month of Ramadan, a different speaker gives a short talk here to everyone gathered. Then, after the Maghrib or sunset prayer, the fast is broken with rice, meat, fruit, desserts, and tea. Sometimes Islam won't crop up in conversation at all. But friendships are built, curiosity is aroused, and perhaps stereotypes would have been broken.
I think that I kind of really identified with the Muslim community by their standards, not drinking alcohol and fasting and things like that. So I didn't have any negative perceptions, but I think that being involved in a community helped me to understand the Muslim community even more and to be able to share that with my community back in the States.
Stephen Mills and Steve Smith are getting a sneak preview of the feast that awaits them in a few hours' time. These two non-Muslim teachers from Oldham in the north of England have been fasting all day as part of an initiative called Share Ramadan, the brainchild of Manu Mia, another teacher. It's around 5:30 p.m.
You know, working in such a high Muslim school, I thought it'd be a brilliant experience for me to see what not only the colleagues that I have, but the kids that I teach go through. I just thought it'd give me a bit of an insight into what they go through and understanding.
How's it been for you so far? So you didn't get up for breakfast, first mistake, right?
No, yeah. I ate at about 11:30 last night. No, I didn't wake up. I'm not feeling too bad, actually. I thought hunger would be the big thing because I've got a healthy appetite, I want to say. But it's been the thirst that's really, really challenged me.
Did you know much about Ramadan? Why Muslims fast?
This is my second year doing it, and I'd say the first reason I did it was because, coming from my background, I had very little idea about Muslim religion, about Ramadan, the importance of it, why do it. So the first thing was I wanted to get to know more about it. That was my first reason for even doing it.
And how are you finding it?
Not too bad. Hunger has been okay. Lunchtime, walking around seeing some people eat, that was a bit difficult. Kind of had to turn away from that. Thirst is the main one. After about 10 or 11, it started to kind of kick in. Love a glass of water. And you kind of sometimes go to reach for it. And it's, oh, no, can't.
Challenge, invite, share. Share Ramadan.
Share Ramadan has become something of a social media phenomenon. Challenge a non-Muslim neighbour or colleague to fast for a day, break the fast with them, and share the moment and experience on social media. It's got non-Muslims all across Britain experiencing the Ramadan fast.
First day, I'm always told, is the hardest of the fast anyway.
I was approached by one of my colleagues, Nanu Mir, to take part in the challenge.
It's a great way to get to know people, of course.
Share Ramadan started when the Muslim community were getting a lot of bad press. One thing I realized, you know, the media isn't on our side and saying so much things, and certain headlines are putting the lives of many innocent people at risk. So what can we do? You know, you have children, and would you want to leave them behind wealth or money? You know, why not? You know, that is fair and that is safe. And that will only come about is when there is an understanding, and the barriers of fear and suspicion, when they have disappeared from our society.
It is that. For me, it's been that sacrificing things that you take for granted every day. Like, you know, people struggle for water, and I can just go and get one anytime, a glass of water or a drink of water anytime I want. People struggle for food, but, you know, at the end of this, I know I'm going to sit down with 10 or 12 friends and have a lovely meal.
Before I started working in the job I'm in now, all I knew about the Muslim faith was what I read, typically on media, newspapers, whatever it be. Then I've actually become friends with them, and I'd like to think with Nana, who's invited me into his house to do Shah Ramadan, not only have I found out about the Muslim culture, but I've become closer with him, with other friends, so we can talk about anything. It doesn't have to be about Muslim, but it just means that there's not that kind of them and us type culture.
A few hours later, and at last, it's nearly time to break the fast. Nanu lays on a delicious Bangladeshi meal in his front room, enough to satisfy any appetite, while around a dozen Muslim and non-Muslim colleagues and friends laugh and joke. Finally, it's time to tuck into the food. Stephen and Steve are obviously very relieved men.
It's the last Friday of Ramadan, and thousands of Muslims are preparing to march through the streets of central London, condemning Zionism and supporting the Palestinian resistance struggle, as they do every year during the annual Al-Quds March. Now, Ramadan is obviously mostly associated with spirituality and quiet reflection, but it's also a time when Muslims increase their efforts to promote justice in the public arena.
This Jerusalem Day march took place a year after Israel's war on Gaza, which killed over 2,000 Palestinians and devastated the infrastructure of the besieged territory. The Palestinian struggle against Israeli occupation and aggression has always been at the center of Islamic politics and has unified Muslims from different nations and traditions since Israel was created. The march climaxed outside the US Embassy in London, where, again, the centrality of the Palestinian cause for Muslims around the world was emphasized.
And today the people of Muslim countries around the world stand shoulder to shoulder with moral-seeking people in the support of the Palestinian nation and gather in the streets to remind the world of the barbaric crimes and atrocities of the occupying Zionist regime.
Zionist is a criminal conspiracy, a colonizing project which will only be complete with the disappearance of the Palestinian people.
This year's Ramadan also saw the high-profile launch of an attempt by a Sufi Muslim group to counter the Takfiri ISIL narrative, which has attracted a tiny minority of British Muslims. Pakistani scholar Taher al-Qadri unveiled a draft school curriculum in London which condemned ISIL and extremist ideology. Qadri, who has previously declared Takfiri's non-Muslim, said it was essential to teach people that terror was a violation of Islam.
Whatever philosophy and ideology is being propagated and practiced and enforced by ISIS or other terrorist organization, in part it was Al-Qaeda and Taliban and all those people, this is just an enmity and violation of Islam and Quran and the Prophet's conduct.
The initiative wasn't without its critics within the Muslim community itself, who said that it placed the emphasis on the Muslim community to clean up its act, while downplaying major factors behind radicalization, such as British foreign policy, Islamophobia, and racism. Nevertheless, there is general consensus amongst British Muslim leaders that the ISIL mentality and the Takfiri narrative needs to be driven out of the community.
Ramadan being a very difficult and challenging time for Muslims. We've had killings in Kuwait, we had murder taking place in Tunisia and other parts of the globe. So that kind of really affects the Muslims living in this country, in Leeds, because our name has been tarnished, our faith's been abused. Those who commit murder in the name of God, they are absolutely an affront to human dignity and an insult to God.
As the holy month of Ramadan draws to a close, British Muslims will really look forward to the festival of Eid. Now, Eid lasts about 1 or 2 days and is characterised by lots of socialising, delicious food and fun activities for the children. It's a joyful occasion which marks the end of a month of really hard self-sacrifice. And British Muslims will hope that they can carry forward the lessons they've learned during the month of Ramadan and implement them during the course of the rest of the year.
The Limelight.
The Washington Post reported that the United States has green-lighted the transfer of billions of dollars worth of bombs and fighter jets to the Zionist regime. According to the report, the new arms package includes more than 8,800 MK-84 2,000-pound bombs and 500 MK-82 500-pound bombs, according to Pentagon and Department of State officials. Some of the bombs approved have previously been associated with high casualty counts in the Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, in recent days, the Biden administration approved the shipment of fighter jets and bombs worth billions of dollars to Israel, a new report shows. This decision came despite Washington's apprehensions regarding a possible military operation in southern Gaza's Rafah, which poses a significant risk to the lives of hundreds of thousands of Palestinian civilians. According to the Washington Post report, the latest arms shipments to Israel encompass over 1,800 MK-84 bombs, each weighing 2,000 pounds, and 500 MK-82 bombs, each weighing 500 pounds. The Post reported, citing U.S. officials who chose to remain anonymous, that the 2,000-pound bombs have previously been associated with significant casualties during Israel's military actions in Gaza. The MK-84 and MK-82 bombs, which were approved for transfer this week, had received congressional approval years earlier, though their delivery had not been completed until now. The 2,000-pound bombs, which can demolish city blocks and create craters wider than 40 feet, are rarely used anymore by Western militaries in densely populated locations due to the risk of civilian casualties, the Post reported. A According to the newspaper, a State Department official said that fulfilling an authorization from one notification to Congress can result in dozens of individual foreign military sales cases across the decades-long life cycle of the congressional notification. The official told the Post, as a matter of practicality, major procurements, like Israel's F-35 program, for example, are often broken out into several cases over many years. Earlier this month, the Washington Post reported that the U.S. had approved more than 100 separate arms sales to Israel since October 7th and did so without having to notify Congress. Last week, Middle East Eye reported that the U.S. was planning to move ahead with several major arms transfers to the Zionist regime. Part of the package of arms transfers that the U.S. would notify to Congress is a new shipment of precision-guided munitions worth more than $1 billion. In addition to that sale, the U.S. planned to move ahead with a $2.5 billion sale of F-35 fighter jets. Josh Paul, the former director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs, said. The report from the Washington Post comes after a U.S. State Department official said recently that the famine likely exists in certain parts of northern Gaza, with other regions at risk of descending into starvation. This statement came a day following the world's highest court's directive for Israel to allow the entry of food aid into the area. A State Department official told Reuters, "While we can say with confidence that famine is a significant risk in the south and center, but not present in the north, it is both a risk and quite possibly is present in at least some areas." A State Department official said that the count of trucks delivering aid in southern and central Gaza had almost hit 200 daily, marking a rise from the previous month. However, an even greater number of trucks was required. Anadolu agency also reported U.S. President Joe Biden has secretly authorized billions of dollars in new bombs and fighter jets for the Zionist regime in recent days, according to a report published recently. The Zionist regime's war on Gaza continues to rage with widespread destruction, displacement, and death throughout the coastal enclave. Tel Aviv regime has vowed to take its offensive to the southern city of Rafah, where some 1.5 million displaced people have sought refuge, despite warning of the humanitarian fallout that would ensue. The planes and engines are estimated to be worth around $2.5 billion. The sales have not been notified publicly, and there are no corresponding announcements on the War Security Cooperation Agency's website where such notifications are normally posted.
Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, has said, "Whenever I remembered the martyrdom of the children of Fatima, peace be upon her, my eyes filled with tears."
Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. One of the biggest responsibilities that Muslims have been endowed with has been to propagate Islam and spread awareness about the causes that are most important to the Muslims. It's also amplified by the fact that the world is under the spell of the Zionist-owned and controlled media empire, which is uniquely hostile to Muslims and Islam, evidenced by their shameful coverage of the genocide in Gaza and other issues related to Islam. In this week's episode, we will explore what the responsibilities of Muslims are in propagating the religion, defending the Muslims and Islam with the tongue, and clarifying the falsehoods of the global media. First, we take a look at what the religion of Islam says about these matters in the holy texts of the religion.
The religion of Islam is, and has been from its conception, a fast-growing religion. One of the reasons for that has been the focus on propagating the religion or performing da'wah, literally calling others to the straight path. It is also a religion that calls on its followers to correct misconceptions and falsehoods, as well as enjoying the good and forbidding the evil. First, we can go to the Holy Quran to learn what Islam says about propagating the religion to others. In Surah 41, Ayah 33, Allah Ta'ala says, "Who is better in speech than one who calls to Allah, does righteous deeds, and says, 'Indeed, I am amongst the Muslims.'" In Surah 16, Ayah 125, Allah also says, "Call to the way of your Lord with wisdom and good preaching." Thus, it is a direct command from God that believers must propagate the religion of Islam, wherever they are, and must do so with the best of manners and etiquette. Allah Ta'ala also instructs the believers to enjoin the good and forbid the evil. "You are the best nation raised up for humankind. You enjoin righteousness, forbid corruption, and you believe in Allah." This concept of calling others to the right path and calling out wrong behavior or ideas is also found in a famous hadith of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, who says, "Whoever of you sees wrong being committed, let him rectify it with his hand. If he is unable, then with his tongue, and if he is unable, then with his heart. And this is the weakest of faith." And this is a theme which has been explored in a recent book released by the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, entitled Jihad al-Tabiyin. This means the struggle against misconceptions, which, as he points out, is even more important a duty on Muslims in an age where social media and the mainstream media spread such damaging lies about Muslims, as well as others who find themselves in the firing line of the global Zionism and its Western government puppets.
To discuss this important topic are two very special guests. We're honoured to welcome Dr. Reza John Vadadi, who is a multiple award-winning filmmaker based in London. Over the past 12 years, Dr. Vadadi has directed, produced and filmed over 50 documentaries that delve into the West Asian and Muslim identity and culture, and he has also presented academic papers at numerous institutions across the world. Also joining us